those in favor of approving the agenda and minutes, say aye. If you, well, actually, you can all say aye. So yeah, go ahead and unmute yourselves.
Aye.
All right, any opposed? Okay, no opposed. So the agenda and the minutes have been approved. We are not taking public comments at this meeting. I believe if there were some that were received, and those should be briefly gone over during the specific discussion items. So we will, at this point, move in to our discussion items. As you can see on our agenda, we have two discussion items that relate to housing in Tacoma. So before I call up Planners Mesa Sheriff or Elliot Barnett, Mr. Atkinson would like to give us an introduction on the general topic that we're going to be going over. So,
great, Chair and members of the Commission. I'm Stephen Atkinson, Principal Planner with the Long Range Planning Division. As the Chair said, with two housing topics on the agenda this evening, I wanted to take a few minutes just to kind of take a step back and provide a little bit of a refresher on the city's growth strategy, as both of the topics that are before the Commission this evening really kind of help to inform different aspects of the growth strategy, both near-term and long-term. So I'm going to share my screen, see if I can successfully do this. And then I click share and present. All right. And Wong, can you, or Chair Peterson, can you confirm that you can see the screen? Success.
Yes, I can see the screen.
Excellent. All right. So I want to talk a little bit about this. I think sometimes as we focus in on specific topics related to kind of elements of the city's growth strategy, it's kind of helpful to take that step back and just remind ourselves of some of the bigger perspective of where we are and how we got here. So one of the things I wanted to start with just very briefly is the context in which we're having these discussions. So the Vision 2040 regional growth strategy is really predicated on the fact that we are a region that's been experiencing tremendous growth pressures, more housing demand than housing supply, which has driven prices up and also driven displacement issues within the region. But one of the things I wanted to highlight here in particular is this element of the regional growth strategy that recognizes that how we grow is a choice that we make as a jurisdiction. It's something we can influence and can control, and we can also quantify and assess the different impacts of different types of growth strategies. And that's one of the things that is reflected in Vision 2040, is that the preferred pattern of urbanization that was promoted through that planning effort was designed to minimize environmental impacts to support economic prosperity and housing affordability. As a local issue in particular, the issue of housing equity will be a particular focus as we move forward in the future for us. Vision 2040, one of the key elements of it is it allocates growth across the region. And this growth strategy, I think, is important because it is very reflective of our own growth strategy. It's a way of kind of allocating growth to areas that are already urbanized. So the most populous cities in the region are expected to accommodate the highest levels of new growth within the area. It's also a plan to drive growth to those areas that are urbanized so we can protect the natural resource areas and identify the qualities of the region that we want to conserve. So it's a balance of how we conserve, how we grow. But one of the things I think is important to recognize, again, within this strategy is while the metropolitan cities that are designated in the regional plan are planned to accommodate the largest share of growth regionally, that growth is spread throughout all of the municipalities. And so much like the city of Tacoma, the downtown is expected to accommodate the highest levels of growth. But really our policies speak to accommodating growth and new housing in all of our neighborhoods. So not simply downtown and in the centers, but in other parts of the city. So I realize the numbers here are fairly small. A couple of the key things, this is the metropolitan cities category. City of Tacoma is the designated metropolitan city of Pierce County. We're planning to accommodate 127,000 new residents, and that translates into around 54,000 new housing units in the city. I'll bring that back. And I think at the outset here, one of the things I want to highlight for the commission as well is that in all of these strategies, there are assumptions that underpin these elements, and there are assumptions that we can test over time. So when we think about the infill pilot program and that at-home in Tacoma program, we can start to test some of these assumptions. So for example, even something as simple as an expected household size can influence how many housing units we need to plan for and accommodate within the city. So PSRC gives us a population forecast we have to plan for. And then part of our work is to develop some of the assumptions about how many people per household we would expect in the future. And that's something that we can document and track the progress and the accuracy of those assumptions. Tacoma's growth strategy, like I said, mimics the regional plan. The key map, in my mind, that articulates the city's growth strategy is the future land use map and the comprehensive plan. Every color on this map represents different zoning districts, different heights, different scale of development, different types of uses that you can accommodate within the city. And overall, we have growth and development capacity assigned to each of these different categories. And like the regional strategy, it also identifies areas and characteristics within our community that we want to protect and preserve. And that's based on existing policy. The largest color that you'll see on the map is the single family land use designation. And so overall, about 46% of the city's land area is designated for single family development. Overall, what you'll see here in this little quadrant of the circle are the areas and the colors representing our mixed use centers, downtown, our crossroads centers, and our neighborhood centers. And so even downtown only represents around 3% of the city's overall land area. So one of the things I think this illustrates is that while we can accommodate 127,000 new residents, the plan is really underpinned with the assumption that we're going to be accommodating that through high density housing. And so obviously if you're planning for higher density housing as part of your growth strategy, then you don't need as much land area to accommodate that higher density and still be able to accommodate 127,000 new residents. So one of the things to keep in mind is as we start to talk about housing diversity and infill and further studies through the at-home Tacoma plan, is as we start to revisit some of these concepts of how much of our growth we expect in high density or middle housing or lower end densities, that has a correlation to the land area that we need to really support then meeting our overall housing targets. And that's something that really underpins the plan, as I said, is the emphasis on high density. Therefore, the housing is concentrated in those centers and we can protect and preserve more of the single family neighborhoods within the city. Another way of looking at this, again, very quickly, what these colors represent is essentially 83% of the city's housing targets are planned to be accommodated in our mixed-use centers and 17% in other parts of the city. So again, I think it represents an emphasis on higher density housing in fewer, more concentrated areas while preserving the majority of the city's land area for low density or single family. Again, centers were created in the early 1990s, clustered around transit stations and transit centers on corridors with frequent transit service and in areas with civic amenities. The idea is that the centers will anchor complete neighborhoods. So one of the concepts that we talk a lot about, its terminology has changed over time, compact, complete, and connected, or 20-minute neighborhoods that support more walkability, more transit ridership, and the ability to meet more of your day-to-day needs within a compact area. This map shows, just isolates more of the mixed-use centers from the future land use map. And again, what it shows is that as we start to peel back these layers of our growth strategy, we have an overall housing target, we have allocations that are planned for our mixed-use centers. As I said, the assumption is that will occur in higher density housing. And then we also have planned housing targets across all of our mixed-use centers and assessment of the development capacity in these areas. Again, what this represents is that the downtown again, represents the single largest concentration of developable land and capacity for housing. It's also our largest housing target of units and population, followed by the Tacoma Mall, and then a distribution of new population and housing across our mixed-use centers. And one of the reasons why I wanted to point this out is, again, one of the things that we can continue to study is these assumptions and then how they play out in real life and in real time. So one of the assumptions here, Proctor has the least development capacity of any of our mixed-use centers. But what we've also seen in the last 5 years is that it has some of the highest interest and demand for housing. And so while we can plan for capacity across these centers, the market can unfold unevenly. So some neighborhood centers or some crossroad centers may attract more development and more housing than what we initially planned for. What we're recognizing is that they do have that capacity. So some may grow more quickly than others, and some may grow with different types of housing than other centers. So hopefully one of the things I wanted to just make sure that we kind of got across in this introduction is a lot of the past planning work has been focused on these sort of citywide targets, housing supply. Sort of the context for the city in the 1990s and 2000s was that we, while the region was growing, the city of Tacoma was really lagging in our growth. And so the emphasis for 15 or 20 years was on how to stimulate growth, how to stimulate development, how to increase housing supply in the city. And we've talked a lot in the past about the relationship between housing supply and housing affordability. But since 2015 and the comprehensive plan update, there's been a lot of new focus on diversity of housing. So not just focusing on high density housing, but on diverse and missing middle housing types, on integrating more low density forms of housing into single family areas, as well as paying more focus to the potentially potential displacement issues related to new growth and development in the city, and then assessing our access to high opportunity areas. So we've developed new tools in the last few years to really explore equity and opportunity and how that relates to our zoning and development standards. One of the things I wanted to use as an example, as we start to kind of peel back some of the layers of our comprehensive plan, we can start to look at some of these issues, I think, a little bit more closely and then develop new recommendations through the At Home Tacoma report. This is an example from the rezoning work that we conducted last year. What we wanted to take a look at is the neighborhood centers or the neighborhood council areas and the types of housing that we had in those areas. So citywide, as I said, 46% of the land area is single family, 63% of our units are single family detached units citywide. But then as you start to look at different areas of the city, what we see are broad, you know, sort of differentiation of how these patterns play out. So our future land use designations by neighborhood council, 89% of the north end is designated for single family. I can't see Northeast Tacoma on my screen, but I think you can imagine around 90% of the residential land area in Northeast Tacoma is also designated to be single family, for the duration of the plan horizon. So again, what you can, I think, hopefully start to see is the way that while we're meeting a lot of our overall housing targets and housing capacity through the centers and through the future land use map, there are still significant discrepancies in how that plays out at a neighborhood level. At the bottom, what you can see is some of the quantity of housing by type in each neighborhood council district. And again, just some of the different concentrations of single family housing and multifamily housing and the differences between different neighborhood areas. And I bring this up because through the At Home Tacoma report and the work that Elliot's undertaking in that scope of work, what we can start to look at is other factors, whether it's opportunity areas, high opportunity areas within the city, whether it's specific neighborhoods, whether it's specific amenities, and start to better understand the kinds of housing supply that we have, whether it's around schools or parks or specific community centers, and get a better understanding of how our planning really supports some of the micro issues that people really care about within their neighborhood. So just some of the overarching implications here. So Mesa is going to start off with his presentation on the infill pilot program 2.0. So this is really exploring the sort of the soft density and infill strategies for that 46% of the land area of the city where we've got single family designations. And we've been exploring some of the opportunities to integrate new housing choices into those areas. But what that piece of the puzzle doesn't necessarily tell us is, you know, the strategies that we may want to use to better support those housing types. So do we allow those housing types within all R2 zoning districts? Do we rezone R2 to R3? Where do we rezone R2 to R3? There's a lot of other choices and strategies that we will be unpacking down the road and exploring the costs and benefits of those strategies and the differences. So it is going to give us some near-term pilot projects that we can then take the findings of that and integrate into Elliot's work in the at-home in Tacoma project. And that itself, as Elliot will outline, as both near-term and long-term objectives. Over the near term, looking at our current policies and how we can better implement that. And then secondly, over the long term, better assessing our current land use framework and zoning classifications and how that relates to our policies on equity and access and opportunity and missing middle housing. And then leading to longer term recommendations for our citywide growth strategy. So with that, I'm happy to turn it over to Mesa to kind of kick off the first presentation. Unless there's any questions at this point in the process.
Thank you, Stephen.
Stop sharing so we can go back and actually have the next presentation.
All right, Mesa.
Okay.
You have the floor.
All right. Well, thank you, Chair, Vice Chair, and Commission, and thank you, Steve, for the preamble. Let's see. Can everybody see my screen? Are we all good there?
Yes, your screen is visible.
Perfect. Awesome. The majority of what I want to talk about is sort of thoroughly outlined in the packet that you received. So I hope you've had a chance to look at that. I will give a sort of a quick overview of a couple of the main objective here is to finalize the recommendations and release for council review. But I also wanted to just touch on a couple questions that were brought up during the last time that I presented this to you. So, let's see, okay. So sort of first, right off the bat, I wanted to just quickly highlight sort of the program as it's evolved over the last number of months that we've been working on it and sort of highlight some of the large changes that we're looking at for pilot program 2.0 that you have all been party to. So these are broken into three major categories. The first one is to sort of modify the existing project types. Obviously, the DADUs were taken out of the infill pilot, but the three remaining types, the two family, the cottage, and the multifamily were all sort of tweaked a little bit to have better applicability. This was all based on lessons learned from running the program the first time. And so a really major change is the addition of approximately 20,000 more lots that would be eligible for the two family. And this was done by changing it from being a corner lot condition that we were only looking at to being all lots in the R2 that were larger than 6,000 square feet. The second, a really significant change was to reduce the lot size for the cottages a little bit, and that increased the number of lots that would have the potential to go through the program by about 15,000 more lots. And then the last one was to remove the parking requirement, and this really adds a lot of flexibility to the applicant, but it also encourages smart growth and transit access and things. The next sort of change that was made was to expand the program capacity. One way was by adding a new category, the density-based housing category, which takes the comp plan density and applies it to the individual site. And, you know, this is a pretty significant change because it leaves a lot of opportunity for the applicant to, figure out what best suits their site and then have a really robust review with you know, members of staff and the review board to go through and make sure that that's the appropriate use of the site. And then the other one was to increase the capacity from what originally was 12 projects citywide to 60 projects citywide, which, you know, is a very large increase and will mean that a lot more projects go through this program. And then the last one was how these projects are processed. So initially there's two directors' decisions that were required. And so removing that and allowing that decision to be done one time, and the same with the mailings, removing the duplicate mailings and having that be a single mailing. And again, none of the information would be reduced. All the information would still be communicated to the community and reviewed by the review panel, et cetera, but it just was streamlining that process. And then the last one was to allow the applicant to be doing the conditional use permit applications and the infill pilot program all at the same time and not having to sort of stretch that timeline out so significantly. A lot of feedback that we got was that, you know, it was very process heavy and that it took a really long time to go through. And so these are maintaining the integrity of the program and requiring the same level of review, but just doing it in a much more expedient. And then the other one was that we're already tripling the number of lots that are going to be eligible to apply for the two-family housing to 31,000 lots. And because there's only 15 potential projects citywide, you know, that seems like a significantly large number to accommodate that. And there wasn't a discernible pattern that was placing the lots that were between 5,000 and 6,000 square feet into the density areas that we're looking to, you know, sort of add growth as Steve had identified. Which would require a specific, additional sort of layer to be added, such as around corridors or something like that. And so that didn't seem necessary at this time, but that's up for discussion if necessary. The second one was the two-family design guidelines. And the language as currently proposed is on the screen there. It's also in the packet. And the response to this was determined that this is something that can be worked out in the design booklet. Obviously, you know, this project is now going to go on to council and there's going to be a fair amount of discussion. And so, you know, completely finalizing the booklet at this stage doesn't quite make sense because things are still kind of in discussion and flux and things. But at the end of this whole process, the design booklet will really be made to be a really robust guide that helps applicants through the process, tells them exactly, you know, what we're looking for, what we're trying to avoid, and methods for them to meet the requirements of the program. So the last slide I just wanted to put up was all of the sort of project types as proposed at this stage, which is the two-family in the R2 zones, the multifamily in the R2, if it's in an existing building, and then obviously continuing in the R3 zone as it was in version 1.0, cottage housing in all zones except the HMR SRD, and then density-based housing in all of the residential zones. The criteria for those lots is below the pictures there. And so at this point, I will ask the commission to make a recommendation on it.
All right, thank you. We will open this up to discussion now. Commissioner McGinnis, do you have a comment or question?
I do. I have a comment. Thank you, Madam Chair. I I agree with you, Mesa, about the 6,000 square feet. I believe what you're saying in reading the packet, that we should stay at that 6,000 square foot minimum for now, for the two family. And I'm with you there. I think that there's still time if we want to, we're still in a pilot program, to go down to a smaller site, but this allows us a little bit more of an incremental process so that we can see kind of what that change gets us. I have some comments on the code itself, but I think this probably, I can wait for that when we get to that point. So I just wanted to bring the 6,000 square foot up.
Great. Any other comments or questions at this point? Okay, I just have one clarifying question. You mentioned the minimum usable yard space of 10% of the lot area. And I apologize for not catching this earlier. You also say no dimension less than 15 feet. So does that indicate that, you know, generally a lot of those side yard setbacks end up being about 5 feet, so the side yards would not count in that 10% minimal usable lot space? Is that correct understanding?
Yeah. Correct. I think that it requires a, the side setback plus an additional dimension.
Okay, great. Thanks. Anybody else? Okay. So at this point, if there are no other questions or comments, we need to approve the final changes to the findings of fact, the letter, and the recommendations to council and the code language. So does anybody have a motion? Oh, Commissioner McInnes.
Yeah, sorry. So I just make sure I'm reading the right way. As I read the proposed code, yeah. Paragraph B says, the second to last, the last sentence in paragraph B says, once three spaces in any of the categories have been completed in each council district in Tacoma, no additional applications will be accepted. We mean to say once three spaces in each of the categories, correct? We're not
that's
saying
correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I can double check that and make sure that that's correct. Yeah.
Okay, great. The other one in that same paragraph, the first sentence says the pilot program will commence with infill design guidelines illustrating. We're not going to stop the program and then wait for these to come. The program's kind of ongoing, correct?
Correct. Yeah. It's ongoing. It's 1.0 technically that's currently in operation, and then 2.0 will be rolled out with the new design guidelines and all of that stuff once it's complete.
Okay, I'm good. I'm ready to go forward.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Any other commissioners have anything? Okay. Do we have a motion then?
I move we forward the residential infill pilot program 2.0 findings, including the infill pilot program handbook, to City Council for approval.
Second.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All right, thank you. It has been moved and seconded. Do we have any discussion? All right, then we will take a vote. So I'll give all the commissioners a moment to unmute themselves. And all those in favor of passing on the findings and the proposed code to City Council, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right, no opposed, so the motion passes. Thank you very much, Mesa, and thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
So at this point, we will continue on with housing, and we will move on to discussion item D2, which is home in Tacoma. And I will give the floor to Elliot. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Nice to see all of you. I will go ahead and attempt to do the screen share. Get this going. Okay. Okay, is my PowerPoint visible on everyone's screen? Oh, yeah, actually, I can't hear you, Chair.
Yes.
Okay, excellent. All right, well, yeah. It's really nice to see you all again, although I wish it was in person. And after a unexpected delay in this project, as will surprise no one, you know, this has not gone on the schedule we originally laid out for it. We had our public hearing back in February, in the middle of February, got lots and lots of comments. You know, 75 individuals provided comments at the scoping phase, which we think shows pretty good interest in this topic and discussing these issues. We were able to spend some time with those comments and start to derive messages and key themes and so forth. At that same meeting, the Planning Commission gave us some questions and some specific topics that you want to try to understand through this. So we were ready to go ahead with that. And then a pandemic occurred and kind of not only slowed us down tremendously, but also kind of threw some new questions into this project, which has so much to do with housing and the market, the two things that are, two of the things that are very much changing right now.
Two presentations, comments.
Sorry, is there a question for me?
No.
Okay, all right. But the purpose of the meeting tonight is to finally complete the job of just really initiating this project, reflecting not only all the public comments that we got, not only the COVID-19 questions that come up, both about the project's process as well as about the issues that we're going to be working on, and then also reflecting the specific direction that you gave us back in February. And so our hope tonight is that the Planning Commission will either approve the recommended changes that staff have identified, or let us know what else you think needs to change, and then finalize the scope and get started with the real work of the project. And first, just as you all are very well aware, what is this project? The Home in Tacoma project. We have worked on the messaging and really tried to boil this down to a single goal: to support housing supply choice and affordability. We think that touches on all the different components that are at play here, all the highest level policy goals that we're working on. And that was consistent with the scope that we put out there for public comment. And from the get-go, this project has had both shorter-term and longer-term planning actions. As you will have noted in the packet, we're looking at increasing the amount of short-term actions that we may try to accomplish this year. We're continuing to coordinate with other affordable housing action strategy efforts that are going on. And as you all recall, there are multiple AHAS objectives and 27 different actions. We're not trying to tackle all of them through this project. And it's always important to remind members of the community that this is about creating new homes for people in the community, as opposed to all the other related AHAS actions. As we've discussed before, we wanted to try to take the time and spend, about a year and really studying this, build community understanding and hopefully support for a package of changes, think through the consequences and the impacts that would come from making these changes, provide that strong focus on equity and access to opportunity in the recommendations that come out of the Planning Commission, and now respond to the new issues that are emerging through COVID-19 impacts. And just a reminder, we have the two specific actions, diverse housing types and inclusionary zoning. But as we've discussed many times, when you take a look at these two terms, you really are talking about housing throughout the city, that fall into either changes to our existing single family housing areas and neighborhoods through things such as missing middle housing types, or changes to our high density areas, our centers and corridors, which would really involve up zones or increases in capacity attached potentially to affordable housing requirements. And of course, these are market-based solutions that are only one part of the problem, even of creating more housing. They don't necessarily address the lowest income levels in the most affordable units that are definitely also needed in the market, in our housing marketplace. And once again, you've seen the scope before many times, and this is what we put out for public comment with its four phases. Initiate a broad communication strategy, understand current circumstances, develop proposals, and then implementation strategies and priorities. And this would all get packaged into a form of a recommendation that the City Council would take action on in mid-2021. So what did we hear from the community? And first, I hope that you may have had a chance to read through the comments. I know there are quite a few pages of them, which again just reflects the strong interest that there is in this topic. I have done one of my favorite things as a planner, spent time just reading through these comments and tried my take on what seemed to be the key themes and the key messages, and also kind of reflect what are the most commonly expressed themes. And I know that this is an oversimplification, and this is certainly not the only way that you can package this or summarize these comments that we heard. But one of the most interesting things to me was that, at least from the people who provided comments, there really was near consensus on the idea that Tacoma needs more housing supply and choice, and particularly for lower income people, but to put it simply, that we need to do it right, and that there are lots of considerations that we need to take in figuring that out. There was lots and lots of interest, lots of positive views of missing middle housing, and there was lots of interest in multifamily, particularly along transit corridors. Lots of people concerned with helping people experiencing homelessness, transitional housing, and other housing types. But the big message there was missing middle housing was really very strongly supported as part of those comments. We are also talking about inclusionary zoning and affordable housing incentives. As the commission will remember, there really were mixed comments on that topic. There were some people who came out in opposition, some from the development community who expressed the concern that this was going to pass a cost on and ultimately not meet the housing goal. But there are also quite a few people who expressed interest in exploring this topic and support for the notion that development should include affordable units as it gets constructed. Then what's needed in housing, or what are the important characteristics of housing? Lots of the things that you would expect. And parking and design were really at the top of the list. Almost everybody expressed that those are issues that need to be studied and done right. But lots of interest in green building and green features, providing open space, et cetera. All the issues I can say that we anticipate to study and that we think need to be studied when we're looking at infill strategies. We also got a lot of input on what's needed in order to support housing growth and development. And again, what you would really expect, investing in public services, transit, streetscape improvements. People pointed out that you also need to look at jobs and growing jobs, not just growing housing, schools and adequacy of utilities. All those things are clearly strongly called for as part of our study here. And lastly, lots of people provided comments on what we should include in this study, or comments on kind of the methodology. And so first and foremost, evaluate and address the impacts of any housing proposals that we make. Lots and lots of interest in exploring regulatory barriers and finding ways to try to remove those, doing equitable engagement efforts, targeting actions to income levels specifically. So if we, as we understand our housing needs and the income levels of our community, what actions are going to serve those people and those income levels, and lots of peripheral issues or related issues such as tax structure changes. When we do something, what does it do to property taxes, and all those things that ultimately affect the efficacy of any proposals that we make. And these comments or these themes really track very well with the direction that the Planning Commission gave us back on February 19th. You were very interested in studying inclusionary zoning and doing thorough benchmarking on that, in doing best practices, studies for parking and urban design, and how to do missing middle housing right. And you expressed that theme of cost effectiveness of each housing type that we're going to explore, that we want to explore. So how much does it cost to provide a housing unit of various different housing types? Lots of interest in incentives, lots of interest in broad grassroots engagement. And then lastly, you also asked us to sort of sort out the themes that had to do with other related affordable housing action strategy actions. So that's the next thing that that I did in my summary. We heard lots of comments about things that we would consider to be very much related but peripheral or outside of the direct focus that this Planning Commission study is going to focus on. And you see them on your screen there, and they're in your packet as well. But many people spoke to things like rent control, community land trusts. One big theme, build subsidized affordable units. So again, speaking to the fact that market-based solutions probably won't serve the most at-need households or the lowest income people. That feeds right into confronting homelessness. And then other actions that aren't directly creating new homes, but things like keeping people in their homes, or doing code enforcement and making sure that properties are well maintained, et cetera. You can see the list there, and you can see the four AHAS actions on the side. If you look at the comments table that's in the packet, you'll see I've got the specific AHAS actions flagged there. But these are certainly going to be on the radar, but not the direct focus of the study as we see it. So that's an important distinction and something that we want to make sure that you concur with moving forward. So since the comment period finished, and unfortunately prior to anybody really being aware of how the world was going to be changing here, we really are dealing with a very different reality, both in terms of how we're going to do this process and also the issues that we're going to be working on. First and foremost, we know that housing needs are changing, that lots more people are facing an urgent housing challenge related to the loss of their work. So that's a huge challenge, and that's going to, it's certainly going to affect our housing needs analysis, among other things. Public engagement challenges. Clearly, we're not meeting in person, and it may be a while before we're really able to do that. So how do we still meet our commitment to doing broad and equitable engagement in that environment? Certainly going to be more challenging. We're studying market tools through this project, and the market is an uncertain thing right now. So how can we accommodate that and still plan for or build our tools so that they will work with our marketplace and will actually get constructed once the market is strong enough for that to happen. Unfortunately, project resources may also be impacted based on COVID-19 impacts. This is having big impacts on city budgets and timelines and even other projects that, we were assuming were going to be moving ahead kind of on the same timeline as this one. Some of them are getting postponed. So, COVID-19 really has kind of scrambled the deck. But one thing that I think, or perhaps the most important thing to me, is that it's still very clear that this project and this work is essential, even more so perhaps than it was before. It was already an emergency prior to the pandemic, and now it still is, and even more so. but the situation has definitely changed. It's clearly an emerging conversation, as you all know. And so we fully expect that throughout this project, you know, we're going to be wrestling with the implications of COVID-19 in almost every aspect of the effort. So given all those things, the comments, your direction, and our initial assessment of what the pandemic means for our project, we've recommended some more significant changes to the scope, perhaps than we might otherwise usually do at this stage. First, you know, we just recognize the real challenge, the difficulty of in-person meetings. And so we really clearly need to focus more on online tools and outreach. That's not going to be our only approach. And we would always have in-person meetings if and when it's safe to do so. That's still plan A, is to get folks out or to go to where people are. But we're going to be doing less of that, at least in the initial phase of this project. So there's some tools that we can do. Taking a page out of the AHAS effort, we can do online focus groups, perhaps with specific topics or specific stakeholder groups. You know, so we can make up some ground there. We're still going to rely and utilize, you know, paper mailings and other methods that will try to reach people who don't have ready access to the internet. But it's, you know, still clearly going to have an impact on how this gets out there. You know, we will certainly do our best, and there are many people who are excited about the potential of online engagement tools to even broaden the reach of outreach. But it's going to take some work and some, you know, some effort around that. Secondly, just ensuring that the market analysis, which we're fully planning to do, reflects the changing conditions and the uncertainty here. You know, so one of the things that we're planning to do was to try to figure out how we can tweak our current incentives so that the developers will say, hey, that's going to work for me. I will build a project now and I will include an affordable unit. Well, that question is, you know, going to be difficult to answer right now. So we're starting to think more about building towards market resiliency. You know, by that I mean, can we structure these programs so that, first of all, when the market does emerge and when people are building housing more strongly, that everything would be ready to go, and people can start using these tools. Also being ready to make adjustments if market conditions really do change significantly. So clearly going to have a big effect on the market aspects of our study. And lastly, we're recommending an increase in the emphasis on near-term actions. And I've got more information on that on the next slide here. So we have always intended to try and accomplish some near-term actions as part of this project, even though the main focus is on studying changes to our growth strategy. We've been spending some time and trying to think about, are there additional actions that we can do that might go some way towards meeting the immediacy of housing needs right now and into the near term? So that's what you see here. We're now recommending really kind of two tracks on this, a short-term track, and that would be implementation actions that are consistent with our growth strategy. We can't just, you know, skip the entire step of revisiting our comprehensive plan and our land use vision, but we do think that there are actions that fit within that general framework, but still may remove some barriers, may add some flexibility, and may help some housing projects to move forward. And many of these are already underway. Obviously, Infill Pilot 2.0 is moving forward right now, which is great. But are there lessons learned from that process that can come back into another round of cleanups, not necessarily to the pilot program, but some other additional tweaks to our residential zoning, our residential standards? So that's a discussion that we think we can have. And clearly, we are already talking about accessory dwelling unit code updates. we hadn't previously been putting them under the umbrella so much of this Home in Tacoma project, but since they really are part of that mission of missing middle housing, it makes a lot of sense to talk about them as part of this project. So we were already planning to put together some recommended changes to our ADU code. Development barriers review already underway internally within the city working groups, and that's looking at non-regulatory changes. Can we streamline our permit review process for housing? Can we find ways to reduce the cost of utilities or infrastructure for certain types of housing? So that's already underway. The Affordable Housing Administrative Code, that's kind of the rule book for how our housing incentives and requirements work right now. And we know that it could use some improvements and also could use calibration to market conditions. So we are planning to work on that. Our inclusionary zoning and housing incentives updates, those are the bonuses that go with that Affordable Housing Administrative Code. We think that there's opportunity to look more closely at, for example, how the affordable housing bonus compares to other bonuses in terms of height bonus within mixed-use centers, things like that. Again, not proposing to increase height or do something major like that, but essentially just try to fine-tune those tools and make them work better. And then lastly, the three items at the bottom, we believe that working with our current planners, working with the development community and others, that there are some improvements that we can make to our land use code, whether it's just looking at our development standards. There are even some potential inconsistencies across our different residential zoning districts that we think we can make improvements to. And that's the same with reviewing height setbacks and lot standards. Again, not substantial, not going from, 5,000 to 2,500 foot lots or anything like that. And not going from a single family to two family and three family. But again, just improvements to our existing code and structure. And then the last thing, review zoning along designated corridors. So previously, the Pacific Avenue corridor was slated to have a corridor plan created for it. That's been postponed in the near and medium term. And so we know that there are actually some zoning cleanups, kind of similar to what we did with the future land use project last year, that could be done along that corridor and along other designated corridors. This looks like a really long list. Most of these are relatively minor, but we think can be significant in terms of making our existing housing strategy work a little bit better than it does now in terms of promoting infill. And so as you can see, as much as we can, trying to take action that will have meaning in the near term, more along perhaps a 6-month timeline, as opposed to a year-long timeline for the study to the growth strategy. So that's a lot of detail there, but hopefully you understand where we are going with that. And in terms of engagement strategies, not a huge change compared to what we've talked with you before. We still have those both general and targeted engagement strategies. Keep an eye out to doing public meetings and workshops when it's safe to do so. We'll clearly be working with our city council, our commissions and committees, neighborhood and community groups. We can lean on the AHAS structure because they already have lots of stakeholders engaged through their technical advisory group. Those are folks that are really in the housing development community, both for-profit and nonprofit. And so we're going to get the benefit of their expertise there, as well as staff groups working on AHAS implementation. And the Housing Equity Task Force. You will have seen that we sent out a doodle poll for those members who are part of that task force, and that group will continue to focus on equity and social justice through the housing efforts that we do here. And there are lots of coordination efforts that will also broaden our engagement and enrich the input that we can get. The one that I would like to point out is that Puget Sound Regional Council is currently developing a housing strategy for the region, and it's roughly on the same track as what we're doing. So we're certainly going to have a benefit of at least learning from their effort and tracking along with it. So that was kind of a lot, and hard to tell whether whether folks are nodding along or not. I can only see Chair Peterson on my screen for some reason, and thank you for smiling at me. But that was our presentation. I'm ready to answer questions. I'm sure there may be some, but then hoping for the commission to give direction to finalize the scope and move forward.
Thank you, Elliot. So at this point, are there any questions for Elliot from commissioners? And remember, our goal tonight is to approve the scope of work so that the city can move forward with this project. So any questions or things any commissioners would like to discuss?
I have a question.
Commissioner McGinnis. Commissioner McGinnis and then Commissioner Carnes.
Yeah, so thank you, Elliot, for the presentation. I think it's good. I think that what you've changed here is realistic and, you know, reflects kind of thinking on your feet. I appreciate that. I particularly applaud, as you might imagine, the development barriers review and the cost reduction issues, and would, I guess, just ask that we consider bringing some of the other departments of the city into that conversation. As I've said a number of times, and I won't beat that dead horse, but Public Works and a few others, so that those cost reduction conversations can kind of, you know, get into the right ears. So, but in general, I think it's great. I like what you've done here. Thank you.
Thank you. And that is the plan. We're talking with a multi-departmental group on that.
Excellent. Good deal. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Carnes?
Yes. Thanks, Elliot, for the presentation. Really kind of what I have down here in my notes after listening to the feedback from the public hearing was to try to identify a metric for success of the program that would look at aiming for a cost per unit. And what I see at the on this final slide is, you know, a target for units and for investment. But if there's a metric that we can land at for sort of the cost per unit, I think that sort of dovetails into Commissioner McGinnis's request as well.
That makes sense to me, and that that was a big theme back in February when we talked about this, was the cost effectiveness of the different housing types correlated with the housing needs and the income levels of our community. That's something that we'll be studying in depth and coming back with, you know, with targets and you know, setting the potential of each of our actions, using that as a lens.
Great, thank you.
Anybody else have anything to add? Okay, well then at this point, I think that do we need to do a formal motion with regards to approving the scope?
I always like formal motions.
Okay, then we will go for that. Commissioner Givens, sorry, I missed that you had your hand up.
That's okay. I'm still learning the controls on this thing. I was just going to chime in and say I really like the revised scope. I think it makes a lot of sense. And whenever I saw the last highlighted one where it's like, look at review zoning standards along designated corridors, got really excited because I think that's some low-hanging fruit to build some capacity. Also, I love how you presented the community feedback. It was really easy to digest in our packet. So maybe that could be like a model for in the future, how you present feedback, because it was pretty onerous. You know, there's quite a bit of feedback there. So those are my comments.
Oh, well, thank you. Glad to hear it. I had fun with it.
Hey, Commissioner McGinnis, did you have something more to say?
No, I was just waiting for the motion.
Oh, okay. So, and thank you very much. And I also, before we have the motion, I just want to also just say that I appreciate the quick change and the quick reaction and adding the understanding that COVID-19 is definitely going to have some impacts on planning for the future. So thank you very much for that. And do we have a motion? And I put that all in one sentence.
Yeah, it's a long sentence. So I would move that we forward the AHAS planning actions 2020 and to 2021. Put it forth for approval and finalize the scope of work as revised in Elliot Barnett's memo to us.
Okay.
Do we have a second?
Second from Commissioner Strobel.
All right, thank you. So we have a motion and it's been seconded. Do we have any discussion? Seeing no discussion, I will call it to a vote then. I'll give everybody a moment to unmute themselves. And all those in favor of approving the revised scope of work and moving forward, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, then it's unanimous. Thank you, Elliot, and you can move forward.
Yeah.
And so now we will move on to discussion item D3, but before we move on to that, I want to give all of our staff and our commissioners about 5 minutes to just take a quick stretching break. So unless there's any objection to a 5 minute break, so it's 6:02 now, so we'll be back at 6:07. Does that sound good for everybody? Thumbs up. All right, so we are taking a break. All right, it is 6:07, so hopefully everybody is back. So commissioners, if you are back, please signal that you're in the room somehow, either by turning on your camera or raising your hand. It looks like we have at least a quorum that has returned to the room. So we will go ahead and restart our meeting. So welcome back, everyone. So we are on discussion item D3, which is the Pierce Transit Destination 2040 Long Range Plan Update. And we will be discussing the draft comment letter to send over to the to Pierce Transit. So I guess before we start, I just want to thank Commissioner Carnes for all his effort in, my screen just changed, put that back to where it's supposed to be, all his effort in drafting this letter. And tonight we need to make a decision as to whether to forward this letter on as drafted, whether to make changes to this letter, or whether to not send the letter at all. And before we do any of that, Commissioner Carnes, would you like to say anything?
Yes, Chair Peterson. If you don't mind, I would like to move adoption of the letter to Pierce Transit on the long range plan update.
Okay, so we've had a move for adoption. Do we have a second on that? Commissioner Givens. Commissioner Givens, you have your hand up. Did you want to say something?
Sorry, I thought I hit it. Yeah, page 3 of the letter at the top, last sentence. I think the last word should be users, not uses.
Well, wait. Commissioner Givens, we need a second on the motion.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm going to second for discussion.
Okay, so Commissioner Strobel has seconded it, so now it is time for discussion. And I think I will start out the discussion because I think it's a difficult discussion to have. And I will say that I definitely appreciate Commissioner Carnes' effort in writing this letter. And as some of you know, I have expressed some hesitation with some parts of this letter, particularly I feel that we need to make sure that we are consistent in sticking with what the Planning Commission is chartered to do. And our job is to ensure plan consistency with the One Tacoma Plan, which is the city's comprehensive plan. And when we write letters about projects or to other agencies, that's really what our focus of any letter should be. And so while I think this letter has some really great points, and I believe Commissioner Carnes is very knowledgeable on transportation, I think as a letter coming from the Planning Commission, some of it overreaches a bit. And so I'm a little bit uncomfortable with the letter as it currently stands. Commissioner McGinnis?
Yeah, thank you. So I think as my fellow commissioners know, I've stayed out of this conversation because Pierce Transit is a client of my company's. And I am going to still refrain from any particular conversation about the individual components. I think this letter is an excellent conversation about Pierce Transit's. In fact, it may be a little bit too good, Commissioner Carnes. I would love people to believe that I know the things that you've put in Tier 3, all the system recommendations, but unfortunately I don't. And I have to agree somewhat with the chair. I think that we should reduce the Tier 3 down to maybe a paragraph where we say, you know, Commissioner Carnes has got some specific knowledge in this area that he would be, you know, happy to share with Pierce Transit. But I think that most of the Tier 3 recommendations go beyond the One Tacoma Comprehensive Plan management that we're charged with, and more, way, way more into details that I'm sure they're right, but I don't know that of my own knowledge. And if somebody would have asked me to stand behind this, I wouldn't even know how to respond to it. I think it's probably spot on, Commissioner Carnes. I think that if we go to this level, that's really, really probably incumbent on you to do personally with Pierce Transit, as opposed to us saying that we know these things. So I really appreciate all the work you put into it and all the specific knowledge you have of Pierce Transit's systems. But I would think that some of this should be probably communicated between you and them directly. That's my input.
Right, Commissioner Givens.
Well, my previous comment was just about like a typo, but yeah, whenever I got this, you know, circulated around, I really didn't know how to like. I like everything in it, just kind of like what Commissioner McGinnis said, but I didn't know if I was allowed to say, "Oh, wait, I think this is a little too much." I would like to. I think it would probably be stronger if it was a little bit shorter and it was more pointed. And I agree with you, Madam Chair, that it really needs to have more of a connection with the One Tacoma Plan, and probably not getting into specific service route numbers and all that. It's like, you know, things like connecting centers or prioritized corridors and those type of things to strengthen what the One Tacoma plan would be. I think that's where I would probably think this might actually be stronger. So those are just my comments.
Thank you, Commissioner Strobel.
Thank you, Chair. I sort of want to touch on some of the previous points made. Honestly, whenever I need to know something about transportation, I go to Commissioner Carnes on something, whether or not it's something related to us working on Planning Commission or not. I had a different idea of what I thought, I guess, what the letter was going to be that we were developing. I thought it may have predominantly, my original thought was that it was going to be based off some of the comments that we had during our first meeting on this. I do see that some of my comments related to like urban design of some of the station locate where the bus stops and what have you are in the tier one part, I'm sorry. But I guess my question is there a way to distill this from a line by line a look towards the long range plan to what is our sort of mission of connecting this to the One Tacoma plan, but also some of the efforts that we're working on, connecting it to housing, connecting it to just some of the other efforts that it not so much a line by line of the plan, but how does it make sense for us as the commission? And I agree with everything in this letter as far as how the level of specificity it is. But I do hear that part where I feel like, I guess this might be something more of a letter I would see like the Transportation Commission put out versus our mission of connecting, making sure the service that Pierce Transit is providing and connecting it to the land use mission that sort of we have as the Planning Commission. I would never be able to produce a letter this thorough and amazing. I give full, full recognition to Commissioner Carnes of the efforts that he had here. I want to know if there's a way to salvage this in a way that we can still support a lot of the tenets of this without necessarily going through the line by line part and more references to the comprehensive plan. I put it out there. I seconded it because I felt that discussion was warranted to talk about this. I want to be supportive of what Commissioner Carnes has produced here. And I'm just curious if we can have a conversation about how do we redirect the letter in a different way that, doesn't completely scrap the efforts that he did to produce this letter. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Any other input from commissioners?
Madam Chair.
Yes, who's speaking? Sorry.
This is Commissioner Carnes.
Oh, okay.
I generally to speak to the motion. How we got here was we had two presentations from Pierce Transit staff and comments from commissioners to about the Pierce Transit long range plan update, and then a request for a draft letter back in February. So I went back and did a review of transit specific policy elements in all of the chapters of the comprehensive plan, and the original letter before it was passed on to staff actually included sort of an appendix of all of the different policy elements in the different chapters of the comprehensive plan that relate to the recommendations that are made in the letter. In addition, you know, I did a review of Pierce Transit's most recent 2019 transit development plan and a review of the transit corridors that were identified in the long-range plan update with the Sound Transit 3 program. There was not really a process for additional review that was laid out at the beginning. I was simply requested to provide a draft to staff to then potentially be considered by the Planning Commission. If there were an opportunity for additional feedback to make changes, then I definitely would have heeded that.
Thank you, Commissioner Carnes. And I really want to reiterate that I think most of us agree, Commissioner Carnes, that you did an amazing job and you are very knowledgeable on transportation. It's the comfort level that we have with the commission as a whole and our knowledge level, and then just the idea of sticking to the duties of the Planning Commission. So I think you did an amazing letter, and I think you have educated all of us on issues regarding Pierce Transit. And I think we definitely, all of us, I think I speak for everybody, we all appreciate that, and we all think that you know what you're talking about. And it's been awkward. It's been tough because we're not meeting in person, and so there's there's not as much back and forth discussion opportunity with any of this. So this is a learning process for all of us. I guess what we need to do now is maybe talk about what we're comfortable with. I mean, I think that no matter what, Commissioner Carnes, you should send your very detailed analysis to Pierce Transit, regardless of what the commission as a whole ends up sending. Because I think you make a lot of valid things. As Commissioner McGinnis said, I just can't back check or back any of that up.
To that end, Madam Chair, then I would like to retract my motion.
Okay. Yes.
Chair Peterson, this is Lee Huang Wong, staff person who helped Commissioner Carnes prepare this letter. I did not do much or at all. Let me make a few quick comments. First of all, the commission, after receiving two briefings from Pierce Transit staff on the project, acknowledges that this is a very important regional transportation project, that it is a duty of the Planning Commission to contribute comments to make sure, basically, that such projects and the City of Tacoma's comprehensive plan relevant policies are consistent with each other. And so Commissioner Carnes volunteered and the commission agreed to draft a letter. And this level of detail is, based on my experience as a staff person, unprecedented. And it's very impressive. And by hearing the discussion so far today, I just want to make a couple of comments. One, Pierce Transit's deadline for receiving public comments is May 29th, unless they have changed it again. And so the Planning Commission has another meeting, perhaps, at the next meeting, May 20th, to consider this issue, if that meeting is held, given all the situation going on. And secondly, what I'm hearing so far today is that the Commission has a pretty strong consensus that the the proposed update to Pierce Transit's long-range plan Destination 2040. At a high level, it's consistent with the relevant policies of One Tacoma Comprehensive Plan in terms of fulfilling the transportation goals, housing, public facilities, economic development, and so forth. But the commission feels somewhat not very comfortable with the level of detail, which is based on a lot of on Commissioner Karn's personal experience as a transit user, also based on some experiences of some other commissioners, I might add. There needs to be time to fact check. No offense to Commissioner Karns, but a lot of details for all commissioners to digest. So what I'm thinking as of now is that perhaps one alternative way for the commission to consider is to allow or ask Commissioner Karns to send a letter on his own behalf. But in his letter, he would acknowledge that as a commissioner representing public transportation on the commission, was very involved in the commission's discussion and receiving information of this subject. And the commission has expressed its appreciation to Pierce Transit and acknowledged that the project is consistent with the City of Tacoma's comprehensive plan. And the commission understands that Commissioner Karns will write a letter on his own behalf. So the result is that the commission will not send a letter on the commission's letterhead, but ask Commissioner Karns to write his own letter, but in his letter acknowledges that the commission has discussed this issue and expressed its appreciation and its statement that the project is consistent with the comp plan, and leaving all the details to Commissioner Karns to fulfill. So that may be one alternative to consider. With that alternative, you're not changing the letter. Commissioner Karns, and I can definitely help, Commissioner Karns would kind of tweak the letter, adjust the tone a little bit, and add back all the great appendix that he had previously, and just go forward with that in a timely manner. Thank you.
Chair, you're on mute.
Yeah, I realized that. Okay, so we've got several hands raised at this point. So I'm trying to determine who I should call on first. I'm going to go ahead and I know that Commissioner Gibbons and Commissioner Strobel have had their hands up for a bit now. But I see that Brian also has his hand up. And so I'm going to go ahead and let staff speak and then Commissioner Gibbons and Commissioner Strobel and then go on down the line with all the other hands up. So go ahead, Brian.
Thanks, Chair. I just wanted to, and I'll at some level reiterate, I guess, what everybody else is saying. I mean, the letter is impressive and really good. I sort of hate to get to the point where the commission doesn't actually forward a recommendation to Pierce Transit, which also would go to the city council and others, just because we know this is a pretty significant project. I guess I'm hearing a lot of concurrence amongst all of the commissioners in general about the basic message that's in the letter that's been put together and reflecting all the discussions that the commission has had. And obviously there's some concern about some of the details. And I think as Wong mentioned, there's even more information from earlier drafts that certainly is valid to be provided. I guess I get the sense that there is an opportunity to remove some of the details that's really kind of in the third section and probably have pretty quick concurrence from everybody on the basic messages that are in there, the sort of criteria that are talked about, the idea of enhancing service before you expand service, you know, the idea of the frequent transit network and really focusing on areas where the sort of mid-tier of transit service that could be really important. You know, obviously all the discussion in there about connecting connecting centers and along corridors and supporting growth and all those things. I mean, my guess is the commission is pretty widely supportive of most of that messaging. And so I wonder, in an alternative, whether or not it's a possibility for maybe just between the chair and Commissioner Carnes or something else, whether the commission would feel comfortable moving on a letter with a couple of folks sort of finalizing with staff. And then the detailed stuff, I think just like was indicated, could certainly be communicated separately by Commissioner Carnes with even additional information if he wants.
Thank you, Ryan. I guess that kind of goes along with my thoughts, is that we could send the letter, remove all of tier three, and revise the other two tiers to take out some of the really detailed discussion, make sure that we reiterate that as long as all of the commissioners agree that we are confirming that the long-range plan at a high level meets the goals and policies, the One Tacoma plan, and that we don't have any issues specifically with any of the major points of the long-range plan, and then we would just kind of simplify the letter a bit and remove some of the really detailed information. And I think that would be a really good opportunity for Commissioner even to allude to, you know, Commissioner Carnes and have him do his own letter with that level of detail. So now I will turn over the floor to Commissioner Strobel. Unless Commissioner Givens still wants to talk, I know she took her hand down. So Commissioner Strobel.
Thank you, Chair. First thing I just want to recognize is, at least in the chat panel, that Tina Lee from Pierce Transit notified us that the deadline has been extended to June 30th regarding any sort of comment. The more we talk about this and go over this, I want to support Commissioner Carnes and the development of this letter to as much as I can understand it, in that it is so robust. And even as a person who works, you know, on transit issues, it delves so much into specific policy questions and arguments that if we have the time for future meetings, I would just think that I would be more than fine to have a discussion to explain certain aspects of the letter and have a presentation of the letter, because if this is really good work and we're all sort of concurring with it, but I'm fully admitting my limitations of understanding the ins and outs of how this intersects with very specific knowledge with Pierce Transit, I would be able, you know, if we wanted to spend that time, I would be supportive of that, and moving the letter in that direction, and not wasting the efforts of Commissioner Carnes. If we're looking to potentially bifurcate, say, the tier three items, to maybe that's something that Commissioner Carnes sends himself, and then we keep everything tier one and tier two, I'm sort of fine with that too. But I guess, I would lean to my first proposal, only in that I'd be really proud, you know, hearing from Wong and Brian, that if there has been some staff eyes on this, to assure us that, you know, this isn't a really amazing, unprecedented letter, I would support moving it forward with just a little bit more explanation. But it's all a question of what our time and what we're working on during this time that we can accomplish. And so I would just sort of leave it to the body. And if would, you know, propose the question, would Commissioner Carnes be sort of willing to help us go over and help me understand my rudimentary knowledge of some of these very specific transit issues? I can only name so many different routes within the system. And so for me to even understand the connection of certain land use connected to a route is like, I've got to almost get a decoder ring to connect certain thoughts between Pierce Transit routes and what our land use is. And so I would love to hear some sort of, you know, correspondence of the development of the letter. If we're all sort of agreeing, it's very good. But I think our hesitation obviously is that to do immediate action now. And it seems like from what Tina Lee has said to us, there is some time to massage and go over. So those are my comments.
Hey, Commissioner Edmonds.
Thank you. I was trying to unmute and I couldn't figure it out. Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a thought. Could we possibly do the letter from the commission in a more general fashion, like we've been discussing, and then include Commissioner Carnes' details as like an addendum or an appendix? I don't know the proper terminology to be used here, and state in the Planning Commission letter that our Commissioner Carnes, who represents transportation, is providing additional comments in more detail. I would like Commissioner Carnes' work to be recognized by the commission in our letter, and that have it attached to our letter in some way, so that the weight of a letter from the commission brings along his comments and his specific ideas. I'm concerned that if he sends his own letter, that it might not be taken as seriously as it would if the letter from him is attached to the letter from the commission in some way. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. So I guess there's kind of two issues. One is the level of detail in the letter and the issues with that and checking it. The other issue is just not is the idea of sticking to the job of the Planning Commission, which has to do with relating, you know, anything we say with regards to the consistency with the comprehensive plan. I do not think it's a good idea to take a letter from another commission, an individual commissioner, and attach it to a Planning Commission letter, because that's really the same as us signing off on that letter. And if we're not comfortable signing off on the current letter, then that's not going to work out. And theoretically, any letter should be given the same merits, just like it should be given the same merits when somebody sends a letter to Planning Commission. Hopefully you read everybody's letters and not just the letters from the different boards and commissions. Brian?
Yeah, I don't want to, this is a good discussion and I think you guys should continue it as long as it is useful. At the same time, I got the same as Commissioner Strobel mentioned, just saw the same update from Tina Lee at Pierce Transit. I think that provides an opportunity for the commission to spend a little extra time and probably continue this conversation at your next meeting, whenever that is. And certainly is, I think, based on all this conversation and as it continues, there's good feedback there for Commissioner Carnes to consider and options to really think about how the letter might be generalized a little bit and how some of the information could be incorporated into a different format.
Yeah, and as long as Commissioner Carnes is okay with it, he and I could definitely work together to make a more generalized letter. And then he can take that more detailed information into his own letter. And since we do have till June 30th to get this in, as long as the city continues to function, we'll have additional time. Commissioner Givens.
I like the idea of sending us a letter. So I'm glad that it feels like we're leaning towards that. I just had to refresh myself with what was in the long range plan. And I remember going through it, and it talks about centers, but there's just not a really cohesive how they're going to do it in their plan. And I think that's a little lacking. And I think that that weakens our plan, because our plan focuses on mixed use corridors, mixed use centers, and we're dependent, and we want to make sure that Pierce Transit, you know, is a good partner in it. Otherwise our plan doesn't work. So that would be kind of one of a global comment I would like to highlight in the letter, that if they could just make that transit framework to link centers together, I think that would make their plan a lot stronger.
Commissioner Strobel.
Yeah, I would be totally supportive of if you and Commissioner Carnes reconciled the parts of the letter that you think that are not sort of consistent to the Planning Commission's mission. And I'm wondering if we can, if those are, you know, several, that if we can somehow harvest those into something else and in some other, you know, way to express those to Pierce Transit, because I'm sure that, you know, I know with the Transportation Commission not currently functioning, you know, those might still be very worthy comments to get to Pierce Transit. So I'm more than supportive of you all acting as sort of a subcommittee to the Planning Commission to reconcile that.
Okay, Commissioner McGinnis.
I would agree with Commissioner Strobel on that. I think that the two of you working together and use this term subcommittee, it seems like a good way to reconcile where we are with where we need to go.
Okay. Any other comments? Concerns? All right. So we can take this as, Commissioner Strobel.
I just want to hear from Commissioner Carnes. I haven't heard from him in a while.
I'm perfectly fine with, you know, working with additional members of the commission to refine the letter, to potentially, you know, constrain the scope if that's what the body wishes to do. I was simply tasked with providing a draft, and so that's what I've done in this case. So I'm more than happy to work with Chair Peterson or anyone else on a second cut of the letter, and I'm more than happy to give a short presentation about maybe perhaps some of the more detailed points of of some of the recommendations at the network or the route level. When I proposed the motion, normally what is customary when the maker of a motion makes a motion and there is a second is to defer to the original maker of the motion to give a brief sort of gist of what the motion is about and maybe even a little bit of description. And I did have a short presentation to discuss some of those points, but I did not get the opportunity to make that presentation. So in the future, I would appreciate just a short period to be able to make that case.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments, questions?
Commissioner Torres.
Hi, I would love to hear from Commissioner Kearns and hear his presentation and his reasoning. Like, this is really like new to me, like, and I am probably the least experienced in transportation. So seeing the letter, obviously it is a lot of detail. I don't necessarily have a problem with the detail. I just want to learn about it. So I would love to hear from Commissioner Kearns as to, you know, diving into a little bit more about this detail and informing us about, you know, what from his perspective is in alignment and what needs to be done so that we can make a more well-informed decision and have that included in the letter. So I would love to hear that from Chris.
Commissioner Strobel.
Yeah, I actually, I would be supportive of Commissioner Kearns giving his presentation right now so that we have some good context as we look at sort of a track changes or a change of the format of the letter. And so I think that will give us some good guidance for how we, you know, how we see what you do and what goes in and what goes out. So I would be supportive of that if you know, the rest of the body was supportive of that.
Commissioner Kearns, are you prepared? Is your presentation a verbal presentation?
It's mostly a verbal because I was only expecting to have maybe 2 minutes to speak.
Okay, so why don't you go ahead and give us the information, your presentation, and
sure. So I guess I'll start with that then. So the purpose of this letter is to ensure that the Pierce Transit's planning is in general concurrence with the city's comprehensive plan. The letter defines the city's objectives in tier two of the document, which are concurrence with the One Tacoma plan among other plans, standardization of route classifications to support the planning coordination with the city, integration and coordination with regional transit projects, ensuring strong linkage between the level of land use intensity and transit services, effective routing connecting mixed-use centers, regional growth centers, and regional transit facilities to support locations for affordable housing near transit, explicit prioritization of frequency and span over new routing, and a commitment to social equity and an active partnership and collaboration between Pierce Transit and the city to implement the plan. In Tier 3, the letter gets into specifics about system, network, and corridor recommendations. At the system level, the letter suggests that expanding access to reduced fares and improved access to fare payment systems. This was noted earlier by several commissioners of the need to expand, you know, the location of for access to ticket vending machines, as well as improve low-income access to transit. At the same time, the letter suggests also improving transit reliability and convenience, and in prioritizing the improvement of existing service before starting new services. And part of the intent of that particular recommendation is to restore regular all-day service in Northeast Tacoma, which was one request by Commissioner Edmonds. From a network perspective, creating a frequent transit network that the city can build density around is very important. The intent is to have Pierce Transit define their frequent network, and then we can import that network into the transportation element of the comp plan, where it can then be referenced by planning and development services, public works, and the development community. A frequent transit network will also help the city in planning where affordable housing can be supported while not limiting the mobility of residents with lower incomes. Reducing duplication of services with Hilltop Tacoma Link extension is also an important concept, which because that line is less than 2 years from launching at this point, and we don't really have any indication from Pierce Transit about what changes to routes in along the corridor will come to be. That recommendation is to have the Transportation Commission actually review those routing plans within, 6 months prior to Hilltop Link coming online. So there is some deference to the Transportation Commission for reviewing any additional plans from Pierce Transit. At the corridor level, I'd really just like to highlight PT-14, which addresses the need for a joint high-capacity transit study along South 19th Street, and that was that was one concept that that came up during Planning Commission that really highlighted the need to rectify the fact that there's a Sound Transit 3 project along that corridor, as well as the Metro Parks potential athletic facility on this 19th Street corridor, to try to get all of the players to the table with a joint high capacity transit study. Now, additional changes such as PT-12 suggest that the unification of 6th Avenue service with some service connecting to UW-Tacoma, because as bus rapid transit comes online, that the current route is scheduled to terminate at Commerce Street, where it may impact riders on the southern portion of that route. I can get in. It gets really difficult to sort of unpack some of the more detailed corridor discussions, but I can we can really walk some of those components back out of the letter, or I can go into additional detail. But even though I feel like I've been a little bit of a punching bag today, I do want to thank the rest of the commission for your engagement. And I really did try to integrate the comments from commissioners that were submitted to staff and that were voiced at the last meeting where we had this discussion. And I do want to voice my appreciation to staff for helping to get to the initial draft into its current form before the commission. So I yield the floor.
You're muted, Chair.
Thank you. Yeah, I realize that. Okay, so I think unless there's objection, what we'll do is we'll take this. Commissioner Carnes and I will meet virtually and discuss the letter in more detail and bring it back, hopefully, at our next Planning Commission meeting. Does that sound like a good plan for everybody? I see some nodding heads.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Sounds good. Anything else to add with regards to this? Okay, so we will close the discussion on D3, the Pierce Transit Destination 2040 Long Range Plan Update comment letter. And I will turn the floor back over to staff to talk about tentative topics for the upcoming meetings and communication items and what's kind of going on with the city right now and what we should be expecting in the near or not so near future.
Thank you, Chair. This is Brian Boudet, the planning manager. Just wanted to give a couple of updates, I guess, first on some existing projects, the Tide Flats Subway Plan, or the Tide Flats Interim Regulations, Everybody's favorite project is going through its renewal process with the City Council as we speak. So they held their public hearing last night. I think there were somewhere around 20 or 30 folks that testified. They did hold a virtual public hearing that went fairly smoothly. So lots of testimony and lots of written. I think there are well over 100 comments. So they have first reading scheduled for next week, and then second reading is the week after that. I think it's the May 19th. So the Historic Preservation Month is right now. There was information in your packet, I know, that we provided. Lots of events going on. They're basically all virtual events, but that's a cool opportunity for all of us who are stuck at home, or at least can't get out of home nearly as easy as we normally could. So check out those events. There's some good stuff there. IPS, Infrastructure Planning and Sustainability Committee, I think they're canceled now through the end of May. Basically, all of the City Council's committee meetings are canceled, I think, through the end of May. So hopefully those will get restarted again in June. We'll see how things develop here as far as public meetings go. Let's see. Lastly is and the most unfortunate one for me. We're recognizing the budget struggles that the city is going through right now. That is, I think, as folks have seen in the newspaper, impacting city staff, and that is also impacting our staff. So as of this next Monday, the 11th, pretty much the vast majority of the planning division is going to be on a temporary furlough or kind of a temporary layoff status for about 3 months. So the reality of that obviously is a pretty significant impact, not only on the planning division and what work we can or now won't be able to get to, at least in the timelines we had originally conceived, but also will have an impact on the planning commission. It's certainly going to put on hold some significant projects like the annual amendment, the housing equity task force, you know, TOD advisory group is probably affected, and a number of the other projects that we have going on. So this is all just sort of coming quickly. We met with staff this morning, actually. So this is pretty fresh. And honestly, we're still trying to figure out exactly what all that means and how we can adjust and still move things forward as effectively as we can. So I bring it up in not only just so that you have an awareness, but also, like I say, it's going to impact planning commission and meetings. We may have to restructure a little bit. We may have to meet a little less often. I'm not sure. We're going to be over the next few days here looking really closely at the planning commission's tentative agenda and items that you had scheduled and try to get a real strong sense of which things really need to move forward and can move forward with the significantly reduced staffing that we will have. So like I say, unfortunate and difficult things. Staff's going through a tough time right now with all of that. And I know lots of other folks, other organizations are struggling similarly, but I wanted to make sure you at least had some awareness of what was going on. And we will certainly be in contact more over the next few days regarding the next planning commission meeting and scheduling an agenda item.
Thank you, Brian. Is there anything else? Okay.
That's all I've got. Has anybody else got anything?
Commissioner Struggle, you've got your hand up.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Brian. I didn't get exactly the time frame can you speak a little bit? I just want to know more about, I guess, what you guys are going through. I didn't get the exact amount of time that you guys are going through the temporary furlough.
Yeah. So the furlough essentially extends to the end of July, July like 27th. So most of the division will be on layoff starting on Monday. So from the 11th through July 27th. So it's right. It's like 11 weeks, I think, technically.
Yeah, and this is these are furloughs, not layoffs.
Yeah. It's a temporary layoff or a standby layoff, but yeah, essentially what most folks would call a furlough.
And so I'm assuming you're all as a department going through the process of who isn't on furlough, but you're saying probably like a significant percent, like 90% of the department is going to be on this.
Well, and I'll make the distinction between obviously we are in planning and development services. The permitting function is having a little bit of impact, but not nearly as significant. It's really the planning division, the long range planners and the historic preservation program that is primarily affected. So out of the, I think we have like 10 or so staff. I mean, really it's going to be Ruben and Steve are the only ones that are not being furloughed at this point.
Okay. I'm sorry for that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Commissioner Edmonds.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to apologize to the Commission and to you, Madam Chair, for my being late and actually missing last meeting. My Windermere office shut down and the Metro Park shut down, so I'm kind of just floating around here at home and I lose track of the days. I forget what day of the week it is. So I will get better. I will. I promise. And again, I do apologize for not showing up and showing up late tonight. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Anything else before I adjourn our meeting?
Just so Commissioner Edmonds knows, she's not the only one. It's easy to forget what day it is in this kind of weird world we're living in right now. And I want to commend Commissioner Torres for keeping her cat kind of, you know, under wraps there. Saw him a few times. So I thought that was funny.
Yeah, next meeting, everybody has to bring a pet. All right. Thank you. There's no last minute hand raises. I am going to go ahead and adjourn this meeting. It's 7 p.m. And thank you, everyone, for sticking through this for 2 hours. And the meeting is now adjourned.